Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you big book study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Monday, December the 7th. It's the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. And today we are reading from the big book, and we are on page 21, the second paragraph. Here is the fellow, and we're going to read through nine lines only, ending with becomes disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. And the comments will be focused just on those nine lines. And today's readers are the 12 Steps, Laura T., the 12 Traditions, Kim T., the readers of the text are Kara L., Sherry M., and Leslie M., and the share ID for Sunday, our special edition yesterday, which was on Step 10, Great Edition, was December the 6th, is 15,929, that's 15929. And for Monday, December the 7th, the 7 a.m. meeting, that's this morning's meeting, is 15,933, that's 15933. And our newcomer greeter is Lorraine N., and our announcement person is Robin P. Our OA preamble, Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who through shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You, Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Laura R. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Mo. This is Laura R., grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thanks, and I pass.
Thank you, Laura R., and I will now ask Kim T. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Kim T. in Northern Michigan. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain a personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
And thank you, Kim T. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 21, the second paragraph down. Here is the fellow, and we're going to read through 9 lines only, and it ends with, becomes disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. And the comments will be on those 9 lines. And I'm now going to ask Kara L. to get us started. Good morning, Kara.
Good morning, Mo. This is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater in Long Beach, California. Here's the fellow who has been puzzling you, especially in his lack of control. He does absurd, incredible, tragic things while drinking. He's a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He is seldom mildly intoxicated. He is always more or less insanely drunk. His disposition while drinking resembles his normal nature, but a little. He may be one of the finest fellows in the world, yet let him drink for a day, and he frequently becomes disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. Good morning, my fellows. This is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. Boy, you know, I knew this paragraph was coming, this description of myself, right? This identity where I identify in, you know, we're in a chapter that's called There's a Solution, and I have to identify first before I can believe that I have a problem that needs to be solved. In my case, that's pretty easy, you know, when we start with this description, and the last line, dangerously antisocial. When I'm in my food, I don't care about you. I don't care about what's happening around me. I care about how I'm going to eat, what am I going to eat, and what is it going to look like. That's my main focus. And when I have food neutrality and the food is down, all of a sudden, then I care about everything around me. And then that's when I have to focus on my emotional sobriety, because then I start in with the other things, right? But he does absurd, incredibly tragic things while drinking, while eating. He's a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I can't tell you, my family living with me. How confusing of a person I am, right? Before I was in recovery, you never knew who you were getting in the day. You never knew what food was calming me or what diet I was on that was making me anxious, what I was going to try and control. My husband never knew who he was going to wake up to. You know, because I was in self 24/7. I was trying to direct my life, direct those around me, and be in charge of everything. And feeling totally overwhelmed and out of control of everything at the same time. Right? What changed? Finding a higher power, working these steps, and becoming part of a fellowship and giving service. And those are the things I do daily. And that identity I found in reading this paragraph lets me know today that there is a solution. And when I work with others, it's such a gift to be able to say, we're starting this chapter and there's an answer for you, because I found an answer in this book and I'm ever so grateful. Thanks for everybody doing service today on the meeting, bringing it to us. And thank you for my fellows who are going to share. I can't wait to hear what you have to say in this paragraph. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Kara L., for getting us started. And before I take the names of those who would like to share, I just want to remind you that although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you haven't shared since last Wednesday, I guess it is, then you could share today. I'll take your names.
Donna.
Maria T.
I got Larry. Who was after Larry?
Maria T.
Maria T.
Donna B.
Donna B. Anyone else? Got Larry G., Maria T., Donna B.
Annabelle Z.
Annabelle Z. Thank you, Annabelle.
Deborah G.
Deborah G. One more.
Linda Margo P.
Margo P. Who was that after Margo? I'll put you on the next lineup.
Linda G.
Linda, I'll put you in the next lineup. Okay, Linda?
Thank you.
Okay, so we have Larry G., Maria T., Donna B., Annabelle Z., Deborah G., Margo P., and Linda will go on our next roundup. Okay, let's get going. Larry, will you start us off? Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Larry G., and I'm from Northern California. And thank you, Team Amundi, for your service. In the margin, I wrote, how could I be this sick? I went through the big book with my vision sponsor for the first time, seeing through the eyes of a compulsive eater. And I was ready. I did not want to live on May 17th of this year. I did not want to live. I was, just take me. And I found this program. I found my sponsor, and or I should say the program found me and the sponsor found me. And we went through the steps. And when I read this paragraph, it was like getting a gut punched. I was just reeling because I, for the first time, the scales had come off my eyes, and I was seeing myself who I truly was, which was a sick and dying compulsive eater. I never wanted to admit that. I held that out like a badge of honor in 26 years and over years anonymous. I didn't identify myself as a foodaholic. I was better than you people. I was better than the people in this room who identify themselves as a compulsive eater. And therefore, I didn't have to take, I took myself off the hook. I went through steps as just an obligation, just to say I went through steps. But I wrote in margin, how could I be a sick man? And today I can see now that my mind's been defogged, how warped my mind was. In the end, I got fired from a high-paying job because I had abused my expense account. I was getting $1,000 a month in an expense account, and I used that money for food. I was eating at extravagant restaurants with friends. And I got called on the carpet. I got fired because of that. Soon after that, I was stopped by a law cop, one of these product loss cops in a grocery store. I was sampling food from a bulk food bin, because I felt entitled because I spent so much money there each month. And I got stopped outside the store and said, the next time this happens, you're going to be arrested. This is when I was sober. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I did this. This was about 10, 15 years ago. And I forgot all about that when I was going through the steps with my division sponsor. I have since made amends. I made amends in another program to both my former employer and also to that store that I was taking food. But I was doing that while I was going to meetings proclaiming I was abstinent, not knowing how sick I was. Today, this weekend,
Larry? Huh. Well, we lost Larry. Sorry, Larry, you got something happened. All right, let's go on to Maria T. It was time anyway. Maria?
This is Maria T. Good morning. Thank you for your service and thank everybody else for their service as well. Yeah, just listening to this piece, you know, I was thinking back to what it was like 8 months ago when I was definitely not abstinent and not recovered, having been in Norway for many years, having been in a Norway big book fellowship for many years, you know, knowing the solution in the big book, I just could not get it. I was totally, I was just sick. And I hated admitting it. I absolutely hated admitting it. But I really identify with the Jekyll and Hyde personality, you know. I used to go out and portray this person on the outside and, you know, that I was kind and caring and all that. And I'm not saying that isn't my personality or, you know, but I felt inside of me a complete fraud. You know, I'd come home, I'd be shouting and screaming at my child. I'm a single mom. He's got special needs. You know, I really struggled with pain inside of me, outside of me. And I just hated myself. You know, I just hated who I was. I was full of shame. I was full of remorse. I was full of guilt. And then on the outside, when I went outside and I was with friends, you know, I would portray this different personality completely. So, you know, coming home and being able to, you know, sit and stuff my face. I would go and buy something in the shop and then, you know, sneak it home or hide it somewhere. You know, I was constantly being dishonest. And I used to say to my sponsor at the time, you know, why is it that I can't get this, you know? And, you know, and I know why. You know, I know why. I wasn't willing or prepared to completely surrender everything. And it wasn't until I did a step four with a new sponsor in A Vision for You that I was able to pick out why it was, what it was that was holding me back. And today I'm a complete, you know, I wouldn't say my personality's completely changed because I am the same person, but I would say that on the outside and the outside and the inside are they match. You know, I'm not going around pretending to be somebody I'm not. I'm just being myself, and that's who. And I'm completely. I feel honest. I feel that I'm not being a fraud anymore. And you know, that in itself has through working the steps and through being able to do step tens and completely the spiritual solution is what makes me a better person today. And being abstinent, being sober makes me a better mom, makes me a better employer, makes me a better person completely. And I'm not struggling constantly with this Jekyll and Hyde personality all the time. So with that, I'll pass. And thank you for letting me share.
Right on the nose. Thank you, Maria T. Donna B., followed by Annabelle Z. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning. This is Donna B. My name is spelled D-A-N-A. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic calling from Denver. And I was going to share on one thing, but then all of a sudden a memory came flooding to my mind. Probably about 20 years ago, I went to see a psychiatrist, and I was diagnosed with cyclothymia, which is, please excuse my lack of training, but it was called like a baby bipolar. And so the psychiatrist had identified these drastic mood swings that I was exhibiting, and diagnosed me based on what he saw from the outside, based on the description of what I told him about my behavior. But I didn't disclose the root cause of what was causing the drastic mood swings, which was my binging, which was my purging, which was my eating disorder. The allergy of the body for me is, in my mind, much more complicated than a desire to eat more. As I've shared before, I do believe that a part of the allergy of the body for me is that it triggers a feeling that I just don't want to live anymore. And now that this memory came flooding back to me, I remember that part of the allergy of your body, part of the abnormal reaction I had to the food that I was eating, was these drastic mood swings. And I too, I completed a master's in business administration in 2001 from a prestigious university, top of my class, straight A student, got a very prominent job offer. And those years that I was so deep into my disease, I couldn't keep a job. When I was alone in my cubicle, I was a genius with numbers, right? I loved spreadsheets. I loved calculations. But the minute I turned my chair around and walked out of my cubicle and was expected to interact with other people in a professional way, I was unable, completely unable. And part of my recovery today is that I've been at the same job for 13 years. And that to me is absolutely a miracle. And I would suspect that if any of my colleagues were asked about the consistency or stability of who I am, they would say, oh yeah, Donna, I can count on her. I know exactly who she is. Which is not without flaws, but I am predictable in who I am. And I will pass with that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Donna B., spelled D-A-N-A. Annabelle Z. Good morning, Annabelle.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, my name is Annabelle. I'm a compulsive overeater and restrictor. And wow, I love this, that I also have started the 12 steps in another program. Well, completed, but anyway, I can't transfer any credits, and I've never read this so intensely, studying it with respect to my food addiction. And this is just me, because I don't think I was like this with the other substance. I absolutely was like this with my food, although the previous person who shared, two people have already brought up, I also stole from the bins at Safeway, and I was arrested because I was pretty drunk. But it's interesting that in my alcoholism and my drinking, that what I wanted was food, and I deserved the food. And what's really interesting is that the loss of control really happened because I could still control the alcohol. I could never control the food. I got to that point in the paragraph before talking about, at some stage, I lost all control of my food consumption once I started to eat. And this lack of control and this, they talk about, absurd, incredible, tragic things while binging. I just ignored my family. I think it's the word disgusting comes up later, disgustingly, dangerously antisocial. And then occurred to me how if I was the outside looking in at the way I binged alone, and it was almost like evil had taken over my brain and thinking, I don't want those people coming in my house because they're going to disrupt my eating. And those people were my children and my husband. And it just kills me to think of the also the danger of the antisocial part is the danger we had of not being in communication and in heart-to-heart conversation about our truth with other people. That's dangerous to our psyche. And I was suicidal many times, and also, like that other gentleman, sober, but totally in my food. And now I realize I was diagnosed as bipolar 2 as well in my late 20s when I was totally in my food and out of my food and, you know, super anorexic at that time and, you know, wavered from low to high to low to high. And that's when I was low and didn't have my menstrual cycle and just a disaster physically. And I was so antisocial. My roommates were like, who is this person? And I long for the day that the woman who just shared said that the people at her work know who she is. I'm only 2 months abstinent. Okay. And I look forward to being more at peace at my work. I will pass. Thank you.
That's Annabelle Z from the state of Washington. Deborah G, remind us of what state you're from. Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning, Mo. I'm Deborah, compulsive overeater from Arizona. And thank you, Mo, for chairing the meeting today and all those that have made this meeting possible and all the shares. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for 12-stepping me today and taking me back to those experiences that I lived and was not the person that God wants me to be, and learn that from this program that I can be that. And I was irritable, restless, and discontent, you know, from one food experience to another because I was looking for that ease and comfort. And if I didn't get it right away, I went right into that irritability, restlessness, and discontent. And it came out in my behavior. You know, I was short with people, reacting. You never knew what I was going to say or what I was going to do. I couldn't get honest. I couldn't be loyal friends. I couldn't hold up to commitments. I just was out of my mind. I was in insanity. You know, I was crazy. You know, and that's how I came across to others, crazy. And I also was not social. I could be sitting there with you eating. I'm not even listening to you. I'm not present. I'm in the food, thinking about the food, wallowing the food, savoring all the food, and not being there for another person, just full of self. And then taking food, I remember another meeting I go to, another program, they have all this food. And I take food, you know, they could have this plate of stuff, and I take all this stuff off this plate where others could have some too, and take in the parking lot and eat it, you know, because I didn't have any compassion, any empathy, any concern of other people, you know, that they could have this experience with this food. All I thought about was myself and getting it in my body as quick as I could. And I am so grateful because those beautiful 12 steps in this program and all of you that I don't have to live like that today. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Deborah G. from Arizona. And before I take Margot P., I just want to remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 21, second paragraph. Begins with, here is the fellow. We're going to read through 9 lines, ending with, becomes disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. And our comments this morning are on these 9 lines only. And I'll take Margot P., and then after Margot P., I'll take a new lineup, starting with Linda G. Good morning, Margot P.
Good morning, everyone, for being on this call. Monday, Florida, Margot abstinent for today. Thank you, God, I still have my sponsor. Can you hear me?
Very clearly.
Okay. Sounds like I hear an echo. For the grace of God, understanding the big book, and it's like a workshop for me when I get on this call, because I'm learning every time something different about this disease, the allergy of the mind, and the phenomena of the disease. And there's a solution, you know. And I didn't realize when I keep, you know, when I read this book, the big book, Dr. Jekyll, Dr. Hyde, I didn't understand what it mean. What does it mean? And never mind, I'm a bilingual, but I get confused when I speak in English and then try to throw in some Spanish. But I'm just grateful that I'm able to communicate the language. I remember the alcoholic that I have in my life, and we're all both six, you know, it's a compulsive overeater, and him is an addicted alcoholic. And then there was an elephant in the living room. I didn't understand either that one. I said, wow. And I was so antisocial, I was more like into the food. And I remember living in Boston on a winter when we had those blizzard storm and they closed the stores and they closed everything and you stay home, and all I did it was compulsively eat, watch TV and eat and eat and eat. And I was like, I was not aware the danger that, you know, this disease was causing on my children, you know. And I have a child who has this disease, and you know, it's like, I'm so grateful today that I am abstinent and I have a sponsor, you know. And so for me, really understanding it's the 12 steps, understanding there's a solution, and being grateful for this program that I have a desire to continue, a desire to continue this 12 step, because I have a sponsor who working with me on step one again, and it is an inventory that I have to work on. And, you know, I'm glad that I'm back, because I'm a relapper many times, and today I'm still abstinent. So I just passed. Thank you, everyone, for being on this call. I'll pass. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Margot P. And so I'll just remind you that although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I have a first one on here is Linda G. Please give us the name of your state also. Thank you.
Donna W., California.
Donna W.
Kim J., Texas.
Kim J., Texas.
Terry W., Mass.
Is it a C? Oh, Terry, T.
Yes.
W.
Linnea Texas. B., Minnesota.
Okay.
France N., Lillian, Alabama.
Okay, we'll stop there.
Anne-Marie M.
Was that France?
Yes.
France, yeah. F-R-A-N.
Yes.
I'll put you down, Linnea. I don't know if we'll get to you, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so I don't have all the last initials. Linda G., Donna W., Kim J., Terry W., Linnea, I didn't get your last initial, or France, and then Lana, I think it was Lana B. Anyway, all right, we'll get started with Linda G. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. I am certainly a compulsive eater, have been all my life. I can remember at a very age of, early age of six, getting on the bus to go to school was so embarrassing because I was fat. And everybody seemed to whisper around, "She's fat," you know how it goes. And it was very embarrassing. I was young and I didn't really understand what to do about it. My folks had been would speak out occasionally, "Now, Linda, you don't need this, and you don't need that." And when people came, I was antisocial. I would go upstairs. We had an upstairs. I lived on a farm. And I didn't really communicate very well because I felt so self-conscious of my weight. My parents tried to help me. My mother gave me all kinds of diet things and different programs and so forth. But I wanted to isolate. I didn't want to talk to people, and I found that I could sit and read or do my homework and not, and sometimes I'd sneak, of course I sneak food always, and I had the known to take it out of the garbage that I knew was okay to a certain extent. You know, we do crazy things. And today I am still doing the isolation as a result of this virus. And it really gets to me sometimes, and it's rather difficult to stay out of the food. And I am happy, very happy to be in this program. I was in a previous program, but I have found this more loving, and the Lord is there to help us, and we must depend on His help. And that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you, Linda G. Donna W., followed by Kim J. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning, Mo. This is Donna W. calling in from Palo Alto, California. Very grateful for my abstinence and my recovery for today. And, let's see. This is bringing up a lot of feelings around our memories around being a kid where, you know, I was more comfortable with the food than playing with my all the neighbors. You know, they'd all be playing up and down the street, and I would go home and eat and read and watch TV all at the same time because that felt more like my friend than being out there with other people. And so as a result of that, you know, I'm emotionally immature. So thankfully I'm learning how to show up in my life and my personal relationships and my professional relationships because I have, you know, the 12 steps. So I put down the food and then it's like, oh my goodness, now I got to learn how to show up in this world because I've been used to being, I heard a term about focusing your spotlight. Like for me, like having a meal in front of me focuses my spotlight and all that noise around me quiets down. And that still appeals to me. I mean, still, you know, if I'm eating my abstinent meal and you get in the way, well, you better watch out. So I get to show up. Like others have shared, I stole food from the bins. And I totally forgot about that through several 8th and 9th steps, and then a few years ago I heard someone sharing about that on this line, and I went out and did amends and paid or donated from all that money, all that food I stole, and talked about humbling to go in a grocery store and tell them that. So you know, I get to show up in my life today. I get to have feelings today, and I just want to turn over that today's the first day of at least 3 weeks of stay at home order in California, and I'm sad. You know, this has been a rough year, and it's like, here we go again. And I just want to say, I get to feel my feelings today. I don't have to eat over them. I get to feel them in my body. Feelings come, feelings go. I don't have to block them and then eat over them. And I have my 10 steps. I've already done a couple this morning. I just do them all day. You know, I do have a higher power. I am not alone. I am part of a fellowship. So, you know, whatever's coming up, job or no job, wife or no wife, socializing or not socializing, staying at home or not staying at home, COVID, no COVID, pandemic, no pandemic, I can recover regardless of anyone. So I just need to say that out loud, and thank you, and I pass.
Well, thank you, Donna W. Kim G., followed by Terry W. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, everyone. This is my first time on A Vision for You. I want to thank everyone for being here and for their service. These few sentences.
Kim, what state are you from?
Oh, Texas.
Thank you. Okay.
You're welcome. So I'm going to focus in. I could talk for way longer than all of these sentences. I'm in every single one. But I'm going to focus in on that last one. frequently becomes disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. Yet let me eat for a day, and I frequently become disgustingly even dangerously antisocial. That my food addiction is definitely one of isolation. I don't want anything else. I want the food. I don't want a husband. I don't want my family. I don't want my dad, my mom, my nieces, my nephews. The food is all I need. And as we all know, your best friend becomes your worst enemy, because being so antisocial, and I have a tendency to be antisocial, even during this pandemic. I worked at home for 10 years before Corona. And now I have to watch my isolationist tendencies with this going on, because I was that person that was like, how long has it been since you've been out of your house? Oh, it's been 2 weeks. Oh, look at that. So I have to actively work on getting myself out of my home, taking a 10-minute movement walk every 3 or 4 hours, walking down to the mailbox, going to the socially distanced gym, and making sure that I'm not isolating, getting on meetings like this, because my disease loves to get me in that corner all by myself and whisper all these lies to me and tell me that if you just pick up, it's going to make everything okay. When I know, my spirit knows, because my brain is addicted, my spirit knows that is a lie from the pit of hell. This disease wants me dead. And that is the reality. That is truth. And I thank so much for this meeting and all the different types of meetings there are out there. And with that, I'll pass.
And thank you, Kim J. Was that Kim J? Yeah.
It was. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Terry W., followed by Linnea. Good morning, Terry.
Hi. Thank you for your service, Mo. This is Terry W. from Boston. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, anorexic, and bulimic. And the sentence about the puzzling lack of control just brings me back to these memories. I remember I opened up a very famous restaurant in Boston on the waterfront, which took 2 months to get everything all together, and opening night, there was a lot of celebrities showing up, you know, all the mayors and all these ta-da people. And it was a very exciting night. And I remember they opened the front doors and I put one of those warm, round things in my mouth. I had to leave immediately. I had to leave to binge. I had one thing I put in my mouth and I had to say, you know, my sister needs a hysterectomy. I had to make up something so ridiculous. I had to leave to go on a binge for 3 hours because I put that one thing in my mouth. You know, and also it reminds me of my sister had a baby shower, which is a wonderful celebration. And I ate one of the desserts and I had to leave, you know, to go on a binge. I just had no control. And, you know, I couldn't show up for things. I couldn't show up for other people, you know, and it's really sad. And I think one of the things my husband laughs about, and it's really not that funny, but we used to go to galas all the time and have these gowns on and get all dressed up. And, you know, I would call ahead and make sure the food was abstinent before I got there. I'd call to talk to the chef. But after I had my abstinent meal, I'd go to the dessert table, put one thing in my mouth, and I would be hiding behind the pillars in the place, eating and eating and eating. And the joke is he'd be pulling me away in this white gown with shoving this food in my mouth. And it is so sad that I could not show up for anything or anybody. And this is why, you know, I love in the promises, it says, don't regret the past nor shut the door on it. Because if I don't remember these things, I mean, I cannot believe where I was. And today, you know I don't have power and I need power and God is my power. But back then I had no control over my food. It had control over me, which is so, so sad. And I'm just so grateful for today to be on this meeting and to share things, because people are like, oh, no one does what I do or no one did these crazy things that I did. And, you know, we all have done these crazy things. But I'm just grateful for today and that I'm standing steps in this meeting. And God bless you all. I pass.
And thank you, Terry W. And we have about 5 minutes left, and I have three people, but if two of you could take 2.5 minutes, we have Linnea and France. Good morning, Linnea.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much. My name is Linnea B., and I am in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You know, and I'm going to talk fast. His disposition while drinking resembles his normal nature but little. He may be one of the finest fellows in the world, yet let him drink for a day and he frequently becomes disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. This obviously resonates with me greatly. And I'm so glad for this book because it gives me an opportunity to identify, because denial has been so and is still so thick in me about this illness. And so I get to identify myself here and know and find out that there is a solution for someone like me who, I mean, my gosh, you know, when I, you know, being abstinent and being well and free from addiction, you know, in that state of mind, I'm friendly, I'm reliable, I'm loving. I show up for other people. People want me to be in their life, etc. And when I am in the food, I am dangerously antisocial. I become, nobody wants to be around me. And not only that, I become dishonest. And dishonest is called it like a trust breaker. You know, it wrecks my relationship. So, and not only my relationship with other people, but my relationship with myself and with my higher power. And, you know, hey, I need a higher power. I'm powerless. And without a higher power, I'm hopeless. So, but this would tell me I have a solution and that I don't have to be living in this. I don't have to be Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know, I can live this happy, joyous, and free way. I'll pass.
Thank you, Linnea B. and France N. You'll be our last share. Take about two and a half.
Good morning. Thank you for your service, and thanks to everyone on the line and to the ones who shared. I was thinking something came up for me that I've never thought about, really. I can relate to the Mr. Hyde and Dr. Jekyll, whatever. But what came up for me is I felt when I was eating, it gave me the power. It gave me a voice. So I felt justified, and I started this with my family, my children. It gave me that power to be, you know, I didn't know what normal was in life. Nobody ever taught me. I didn't know what a normal family was like or normal things to do. So I just went through the motions. So my kids and my husband would suffer for that because I wanted them to be perfect. And program has shown me in so many ways how to not be that way. Love and tolerance, taking a pause, staying connected. But I have to tell you that there are still times where I feel that sometimes I'm like hanging on by my fingernails, and I am recovered, but I'm not cured. And my disease also wants me to cut back on the things that I need to do. And thank you, God, that I can be aware of this every day. And even if it's a small program thing that I do, it keeps my eyes open and I'm not asleep. So today I know that I'm just another bozo on the bus, that I am normal, I am okay, I'm just an addict, and with that I'll pass.
Well, thank you very much, France Ann, and with that we'll close our meeting. Thank you all those who shared today and those who gave service for this first Monday in December, and we'll be giving service all month. And I would now like to ask, I will now ask Sherry M. to read. We will close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So will Sherry M. please read A Vision for You?
Yes, good morning. I'm Sherry M., recovered in California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.